Welcome to the Flamini Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 9:13 Greenwich Mean Time. Today is January 29th. And today we saw that the liquidity-fueled advance, which we've enjoyed for the last month, has continued. And in Australia, the ASX 200 was stronger by 1.1%. And at 4,888, that really is a very impressive advance, and the market is now approaching the 5,000 area, which has been a psychological area of resistance for quite a while now. It's been such an impressive advance that the market has become a little bit overbought in the short term. So the question then is whether we're going to have a consolidation in the region of 5,000 or above it. Now, the FTSE 100 was able to push up out of its two-year range and has tacked on an additional 340-odd points. So there's every likelihood that even though it is becoming somewhat overextended in the short term and the potential for a pullback is increasing, that when the FTSE does eventually move into a consolidation, that it is going to be above that two-year range, which will be really very positive indeed. And then the question is, is the ASX going to do something similar, or is it going to consolidate here in the region? Elsewhere in Asia, the Shanghai A shares were stronger again today. They held yesterday's impressive advance and improved upon that performance in here today. And the Nikkei was relatively unchanged. But in Japan, the banking sector broke out of what has been a three-week range and onto new recovery highs, and it's being led by the larger banks, and that's really very positive indeed. And the other interesting point is that the second section, which has been so often a leader in Japan, continues to march higher. And I've sometimes referred to the advances on the second section as monochromatic, because it's very susceptible to moving on consecutive weeks. And it's already been rallying for, I think, 12 consecutive weeks, and it's broken out of what's been a four-year base. And while it is becoming increasingly overbought, the first clear downward dynamic will really be required to check momentum and suggest that at least a period of consolidation is beginning. And in the meantime, we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. And that's pretty much the same for just about everything. In the absence of clear downward dynamics, we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. The Filipino market moved on to new high ground today, and the Malaysian market, which had pulled back so sharply and then bounced so impressively, was relatively unchanged. And the Indian market, which has been ranging with a very mild upward bias, posted its second downside key reversal in about 10 sessions. And these are pretty small moves, and they haven't been really dynamic in fashion, and the key to the key, so to speak, is in terms of the size. And we haven't had a great big downward dynamic for India, so this may be nothing more than a pause and consolidation, but we are not getting the kind of fireworks to the upside that we've seen in other markets from India. It has been a more gradual progression. Also interesting in Asia was the currency performance, because the Korean won, the Singapore dollar, the Thai baht, the Taiwanese dollar, they had been really particularly weak on Friday and on Monday, and they at least paused in that deterioration in here today. So it's not all going to be one-way action for some of those. The Japanese yen was also a little bit firmer in here today. Now, if we move into Europe, the FTSE was stronger by about 0.75%, and that was probably the best performance from the region generally. Both the CAC and the DAX continue to extend their breakouts from what have been about three-week ranges. And again, the benefit of the doubt can be given to the upside. And on Wall Street, the Dow Jones and the S&P were both stronger today by about 0.5%, and the Nasdaq was relatively unchanged. And I saw an article before I began the audio saying that I think it was something like 60% of the companies that have reported earnings so far have beaten expectations. And that is generally down to a better growth environment on a global basis. And certainly we're being led higher by globally oriented companies. So companies like 3i and Pfizer have been particularly impressive. And Google has firmed from the region of the 200-day moving average. And IBM has rallied up to the upper side of its range. And Procter & Gamble, which has been such a slow burn, has had some fireworks in the last couple of weeks and has really started to move here. So, whereas the majority of investors aren't really positioned for a surprise on the growth front, that is what we seem to be getting, and that is certainly helping sentiment in terms of stock markets. And the leadership of the banking sector is really very notable, because it's the first time in at least the last few years that we can say that on a concerted basis, in just about every market, that the banking sector is outperforming. And banking sectors, as liquidity providers, should do well when liquidity is abundant. And liquidity is most definitely abundant when we have quantitative easing in the US and the ECB making virtually unlimited cash available to the banking sector via the discount window, and Japan saying that it's going to create something in the region of 50 trillion yen to go out there and buy European government bonds, and the Australian, the RBA in Australia has lowered interest rates aggressively and is back down to 3%, which was the lowest level that we saw following the credit crisis. And the UK, with the threat of a triple dip recession, is standing on the sidelines and perhaps getting ready for additional easing. So as growth surprises to the upside, and as the global economy seems to be pulling through that bit better, and as China starts to reinvigorate its own economy, then coupled with the enormous amount of liquidity that we have, this is really quite a bullish environment in the medium term. Even so, in the short term, we are presented with short-term overbought conditions, and there is a risk that we are going to get some form of pullback the more overextended these indices become relative to their respective 200-day moving averages. And in the commodities sector, oil today was stronger by a dollar on WTI, and Brent crude also was a little bit firmer in here today. But what we have is a rounding characteristic in the oil contracts, and in the short term, we could see them get a bit firmer from here. And that doesn't really question our medium term and 10-year projection that we're going to see lower energy prices on average on an inflation-adjusted basis within the next 10 years, because there is still some upward pressure in the short term in the oil contracts. And not least because risk assets generally are appreciating in here, and it was a firm day generally for the industrial metal complex, and gold was stronger by about $10. And platinum recouped a good part of yesterday's decline, and palladium was pretty steady in here. So, along with the stock markets, the commodity complex is gaining adherence and certainly gaining investor interest. And cotton, among the soft commodities, is particularly interesting because it continues to hold here above the 80 cent level following a breakout and a pullback, and it's found support in the region of the upper side of the underlying trading range. And this is coming from, I think, a level that is less than half of its peak value back in 2011. When we look at the industrial metal complex, we've had quite a degree of volatility, and we're starting to see some variability in the performances, and tin continues to lead to the upside. The sector has been slow to get off the ground, but if the Chinese economy is going to continue to recover, and the stock market certainly indicates that it is, and China is another market that's being led higher by the banking sector, then that should be positive for the industrial metal complex. And of course, that's also positive for Australia and indeed Brazil. In the precious metals, platinum has been consolidating below the $1,700 area, and it's been a reasonably tight consolidation. And palladium hit $750 again in here today and continues to lead to the upside. So while gold has been pretty disappointing in the last couple of weeks, it has steadied here in the region of $1,650, and it does remain, while it does remain for the bulls to prove, the balance of probability does remain that gold is going to push back above $1,700, back above $1,800, and onto new high ground. Natural gas in the energy complex is notable, because while if one looks on a weekly chart, that prices have come back to the region of the progression of higher reaction lows and the region of the 200-day moving average, it's really fallen really very aggressively in the last week. There's a lot of potential supply that becomes economic at $4. And natural gas prices had rallied from about $1.90 all the way up to $4 and encountered resistance there and has pulled back really very sharply. And it really does remain rather difficult to make a very bullish case for natural gas prices when there is such an incredible amount of supply in the North American market. And that is going to contribute to the USA's competitive advantage in energy for the foreseeable future in all likelihood. When we take a step back and look at the long term, that competitiveness in the energy complex and the fact that that is going to be a major contributor to productivity growth. And we're seeing that the industrial complex, and particularly machinery manufacturers and heavy industrials, are breaking out of 5 and 10 and 12 year bases in here at present. And just a small number of those companies really does suggest that when you see GE and Honeywell and Tyco, Illinois Tool Works, Leg Platt breaking out of really large consolidations, that something must be happening. And the process of industrial automation and the pace with which we're getting technological innovation is a productivity driver. And lower energy prices is a productivity driver. And that's really important. And the fact that we've had this valuation contraction over the last decade makes these types of companies more attractive, and not least because they are, that sector in particular is leveraged to global growth rather than the growth of the consumer. And they've been wallflowers for much of the last 18 months, and they're now among some of the best performers, and that's likely to remain a theme for at least the next year. And these are all autonomies. And as part of that sector, not only for the next year, but that these kinds of companies can do well for really the very long term. And the other sector that's really performing in here is healthcare. And biotech was probably one of the biggest sectors in the tech bubble back in the late 1990s, with the promise of really life-changing therapies. But markets like to travel more than arrive, and a lot of those promises were early. But what we're now seeing is that some of those gene therapies in particular are starting to make it to market. And there is the strong likelihood that in the next 20 to 30 years, lifespans will not only be lengthened but improved, so that highly skilled people will be able to live longer and be productive for longer. And whereas for a lot of people, they look on retirement as something that they look forward to, for people that really love their jobs, there's really no such thing as retirement unless they have to retire. And for those types of people, they're going to remain productive for an increasingly long period of time in future. And that will change the way we think about productivity and think about demographics, considering that the prevailing view at present is that there are negative demographics in most developed countries, and that's likely to be a competitive disadvantage for the foreseeable future. But if people live longer and are more productive, then you have to start reassessing that conclusion. And these are very important changes. So when we look at the global economy and we're cognizant of the fact that there are these huge debt problems, and in here today, US treasuries were weaker by just less than half a point, and gilts and bunds were relatively unchanged. But when we look at those yield charts, US treasury yields, 10-year treasury yields, found support at 1.8%, and that's the upper side of the underlying trading range and the region of the 200-day moving average, and have been rallying away from that area, and that suggests more than short-term supply dominance. And the Swiss 10-year yield has also been rallying in here. So when we look at where the fuel could possibly come from for a new bull market, there's an awful lot of cash parked in government bonds. And we're seeing that the incredibly low yields are no longer attractive in a more benign macroeconomic environment. And just as we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside for stock markets in the absence of clear downward dynamics, we can give the benefit of the doubt to higher yields at present in the absence of a break of the progression of higher reaction lows. And we're at an interesting area, particularly on those total return charts. And veteran subscribers will be familiar with those total return charts for the treasury yields, because we're right at the 200-day moving average. And it's been perhaps the most consistent trend there has been in the last 30 years. And if that index starts to drop below the 200-day moving average and sustain the move and then break down once more, we'll have evidence that there's a top in. Now, that's still quite a way away from where we are right now, and it could yet find support. But if it does top out, then we'll be in a very different macroeconomic environment. So certainly, while the equity markets are exciting, it is the treasury markets that really do need watching at the current time. And with that, I will leave you for the evening, and I wish all the best to all of you.